Well, we're going to, first of all, I want to start off by acknowledging some of the people that I've worked with, and they're listed on the slide, the first slide rather than the last slide. I also want to acknowledge NIOSH. This is an R18 grant, demonstration grant from them, and we're appreciative of that money. This is a partnership, as you'll see here, of people from Wake Forest University School of Medicine and from the North Carolina Farmworkers Project, which is a community-based organization we've been working with for about 15 years now. Okay. I have nothing to declare. Going through customs here. We're switching gears here now to talk, to go in the session is fork to farm, or farm to fork, but we're actually in the presentation going in the opposite direction. And so I'm going to be talking about farm workers and food production and pesticides, and why are these connected to food? Well, they're connected to food because much of our production of fruits and vegetables in this country is driven by consumers and their desire for beautiful, perfect, uniform, blemish-free produce, and also, by the way, for long shelf life, so whatever in California or Chile or wherever is going to make it to North Carolina. And these are the sort of things that have brought chemicals of all sorts into the production process for foods. And so right now we have workers working in the fields who are at health risk because of the pesticides that are being applied. The pesticides, there are lists of them, there are long categories of them, and I'm not going to talk about that today. But the health risks are both short-term and long-term. And there are risks not only for workers in the fields, but what I'm really going to talk about here is the social injustice that these risks extend to the families of farm workers. They are at risk for what we call take-home pesticides, that is what goes home on workers' clothes and on their bodies. What comes in is drift through their windows if they live near the fields. And then, as others have talked about today, Don Villarejo and others, they live in really terrible housing, and so they deal with pests by applying more pesticides. Women and children are at elevated risks. Children are developing, they have faster metabolism, they breathe more rapidly. Women, particularly pregnant women, are also at risk for the kind of short and long-term health risks from pesticides. What happens in our country, though, is that only workers receive pesticide safety training. So unless the women in households work in the fields, they do not receive pesticide safety training. And in North Carolina, where we have worked, a minority of the women actually work in the fields. In order to address this problem, which is the people who are most at risk and who are probably controlling things on the home front are not receiving training about the dangers of pesticides and how to protect themselves, what we did was to design training that could be given directly to family members, particularly to women. The focus of this training is on at-home pesticide exposure, the types that I've described before. And we've used a CBPR approach to develop and to disseminate this training program. The intervention that we're using in the study I'm talking about right now came from a previous study that we referred to as La Familia. And in that study, which we have described in print and I'm not really going to describe here, we used mixed methods research to develop with the community a training program for families on pesticides. And then we demonstrated the efficacy of this using a group randomized community trial design. And what we were able to show was that women who received this intervention changed their knowledge and changed their reported behaviors about pesticides. We also took some additional materials, educational materials that are very pretty and nice, that have been developed by the Migrant Clinicians Network. And we put those together in the current project, which is an R18. It's a demonstration project. And for those of you who don't know what a demonstration project is, that's when you take an intervention that has been fairly rigorously tested in a controlled setting, and you set it loose in the real world. And so what we wanted to do was to examine the properties of this intervention by putting it into public health settings to see if, once we turned it loose, it could actually perform as well. We refer to as La Familia Sana, just to differentiate it from the previous project, because you have to keep your data set straight and things. And this, again, is a community-university partnership, this time, again, with the North Carolina Farmworkers Project. And they had different roles from us. They were the people who recruited lay health advisors, promotoras, and they trained them. These were promotoras that were affiliated with six different public health settings, including county health departments and farmworker clinics and a migrant Head Start facility. What we did at the university was we hired, trained, and supervised evaluation interviewers. And that way we could kind of keep separate who was doing the intervention and who was going out and seeing the participants and asking them questions. The format for this was a six-lesson promotora-led educational program. The promotoras went out and recruited families in their area. We did not define for them what that was, but they were in different parts, different counties in North Carolina. They delivered lessons, six lessons over at, five sessions that were at least a week apart, so they spread this out a bit. And then our interviewers went in and conducted pre- and post-intervention interviews to see how the intervention had worked. Our inclusion criteria were that the families involved in this had to have at least one farm worker living in the home. They had to have at least one child that was 12 years old or less. And they had to self-identify as Latino or Hispanic. Our targeted enrollment was 600 families, or individuals in 600 families. And for each one of the sites, we defined a target which was either 60 families or 120 families, depending on what their promotoras thought they could do and how many promotoras they had. We had a total of, I believe, 10 promotoras. Our time frame was that we wanted to start this and complete all the lessons and all the data collection in 18 months. So we went over two summers and through the winter. The overall goals were to, for the largely women who were involved in this, was to improve their knowledge of what pesticides are in the first place and what the health-related implications of them are. We wanted to disseminate practical and low-cost strategies so they could minimize their exposure to pesticides at home. And then we wanted to give them effective and low-cost strategies for how to control pests in their home, which they had, without using pesticides. So it was an integrated pest management intervention as well. Okay, just to give you a little bit of idea of what we did here, these clumps of bars are the six different public health groups that we worked with. And the blue bar is the 18-month goal for their recruitment, and that increased. For example, this group discovered that there were a lot of farm workers in their area, and they were real go-getters, and we said incrementally we increased their goal. The red bars are how many pre-tests we did, and the green ones are how many post-tests. And so you can see there's some loss to follow-up, as you would expect. These are migrant and seasonal farm workers, and by God, they migrate. And so some of them did better than others. These people are obviously the poster children for being in studies. They lost almost no one. They recruited everyone. They did very well. But we have a range here. And the reason it says completed as of 10-1-10, that was the day I said we quit. We're not doing any more. The original goal was the end of September, but we were a month late. We ended up with 615 participants who completed both pre and post. 97% of them were female. You can see the age distribution here. Most were Mexican, 92%. Most were married or living as married. About two-thirds had less than a ninth grade education, median of two children. 75% were living in a mobile home or trailer. And the employment, 25% were full-time employees, and 19% were part-time. A lot of these women do not work outside the home. All right, so just to give you some brief results, and I want you to have noticed that our data collection ended on October 1st. Now, what that means is it was slightly later than I had anticipated, and so what I'm giving you today are just some preliminary indicators of data that could be easily analyzed and no complex modeling done to just show you that we think it worked, and next year we'll have the full deal. But one of our objectives was to have people recognize what pesticides were and how dangerous they might be. And so this is a question that we have used before. How dangerous do you think pesticides are? And the red bars are the pre-test and the blue bars are the post-test. And you can see that even at the pre-test, 60% of people said, oh, they're extremely dangerous. But what we see here and what's important to me is that there's movement. And there's movement from the red bars to the blue bars. So there's increasing sense that pesticides are dangerous in this group. Looking at a couple of other things, we wanted them to recognize what pesticides are. And so in the first column here, where it says pretest, this is the percentage that got it right on the pretest. And then under post-test, that's the percentage that got it right. The statements, we gave them all these statements, and the ones that are shaded in are the ringers that are in that. And what you can see is that basically every place that has an asterisk on it, there was an improvement in their knowledge. But what you also notice here is with some of these things is that particularly this one up here, chemicals applied to the fields to help plants grow. Those are not pesticides. Those are fertilizers or something else. And while you don't want your children out there eating them, they are in fact not pesticides. And basically, I think we made everybody say everything is a pesticide. And in some ways, I'm okay with that. One of the other things that we're trying to do is increase people's self-efficacy of being able to protect themselves. And so we had several questions about that. And this one is, how confident are you that you can keep pesticides out of your home? And again, the red bars are the pre-test, the blue bars are the post-test. And what's important to me is that there's movement here. And when we do a statistical test that look at, for people who change their answer, what direction they go, it's highly significant that it's going to a favorable direction here. We also asked them, how confident are you that you can prevent your children from being exposed to pesticides? And that does the same thing. The one I don't show you here is where I say, how confident are you that you can protect yourself from pesticides? And they're not confident of that. And part of the reason is that a bunch of them are working in the fields. And they are not nearly as confident of that as they are now for protecting their children at home. Having looked at some of the other data in terms of knowledge and practice, self-reported practices, I think we're going to find positive results for those. But if I wanted to keep my statistician, I couldn't get those for today. So just sort of in conclusion, one of the things this obviously does not do, which I would like to do and we've done in other circumstances, is it doesn't address the basic social injustice issue for farm workers, the fact that farm workers themselves are exposed to pesticides. And that is a multi-level, multifactorial problem that many of us have worked on for a long time. But what it does show is, in a preliminary way, that this intervention, when put out into a public health setting where we had not a whole lot of control over how it got administered, does seem to work. And I will say that some of the stories that came back of things that the promotores were teaching, we would go, oh my gosh. One of the things I learned is that if you hang a bag of water in the doorway, it keeps pests out of your house. I don't think there's any scientific basis for that, but I do think that people were probably taught that. So what we've also shown is that lay health advisors with pretty basic training can increase people's knowledge. They can increase self-efficacy. One of the things that we're in the process of doing right now is interviews with those promotoras, and I almost don't believe the interviews. They are so ecstatic about what doing this has meant for them in terms of their own personal development. So that's an added benefit of it. And so for us, this university community partnership is one that certainly hasn't been entirely easy, but it does, you see how rewarding it is once we see that an intervention that we developed and took a long time to do, developed good materials and so forth, is now one that we probably can package and distribute, and people can do it with relatively little supervision and training. So thank you very much. So, question in the back.
Yeah, it is a very helpful insight into that because my dissertation was evaluating different methods to teach Hispanic migrant farm workers about pesticide poisoning prevention in North Carolina. And at the time, you said, how confident are you to keep your kids away from pesticide? Well, when I was there, all the kids above the age of 5 were in the field.
Well, I think situation has changed. I don't doubt that there are some children in the fields. This year, I know the blueberry workers were a little bit upset that they couldn't have their children in the fields. Sorry. But we have a good migrant Head Start program, migrant education and so forth that does their best to try to keep kids out of the fields. So I think things do change. Any other questions? Yes.
If you ever do any follow-up on this research again in the future, have you considered using any biomarkers just to verify changes as far as pesticides
That's a good question. I've done a lot of stuff with not a lot, but I've done as much as a lot of people probably with biomarkers. And there are two things that one could look at. You obviously could look at dust samples or whatever in the home. The problem is that these homes have been by fields for years and years and years. And in samples that we have taken in the home, we find pesticides that were banned before you were born. maybe not that long ago, but you know, the pesticides are in the home. So that's not a very good way of doing it. Taking personal samples, urine samples, we've taken urine samples from kids, we've taken urine samples from adults. It's very hard to interpret them because of the non-persistent pesticides that are used now. When you get a sample and you detect something in it and you look at its level as being either low or high, you don't know if that person was exposed today, yesterday, the day before, and so you don't know if that's a low level or a high level because of the curves that you might find. So I think that's a very good idea, but right now there's not a very good way to do it.
Thank you. That was a terrific presentation and a really important project that you're doing there.